What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast Value Justification Model with Kathy Derringer and Dr. Jim Berry. Dr. Jim Berry is a athletic trainer in North Carolina at Conway High School. He's been doing data collection and value justification for a long time. He sent me an article that he wrote back in 1993. Actually, I think he said like the Commodore, or like he maybe had to go to NASA to work on the computer there, something like that. I can't remember, but Dr. Berry's been collecting data for a long time. And then Kathy has been presenting at different places across the country, and as part of the NATA, I believe, presented the value justification model, and she's been talking with it big time because I know she's a big proponent of getting athletic trainers in every high school so that every athlete has access to an athletic trainer in their sport in their high school. And so this is what we want to do, is figure out how we can improve the situation, and that's why I've got two experts here with me. I'm Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/value model. So I've got links to the article Dr. Berry included. I've got links to the sign-in sheet that we use to collect the data, and then some other information there. And so check that out, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/value model. All right, so I want to start with the kind of overview. Kathy, why don't you go ahead and tell us, what is the value justification model?
Thank you, Jeremy, and glad to be here with Jim and to talk about something that I think is important for every athletic trainer, regardless of the setting that you're in. But from a secondary school standpoint, the secondary school value model talks about the various ways that we can show our value to our patients, to our parents, to our communities, to everyone who we come in contact with, that by collecting this information and presenting it in a way that's organized and addresses the different components of the value model, we can justify and have documented evidence of how do we bring value to that school district and to that community, and thus why do we deserve whatever X, I call it X, whatever X is for that athletic trainer, a higher salary, more budget, more staff, more resources, whatever that may be. So in a nutshell, that's why we talk about the importance of showing value in everything we do as an athletic trainer. Jim, you want to add to that?
I think that Kathy covers it very well. That's what it is, and what we're trying to do. It's all about improving the model, opportunities that especially secondary school athletic trainers have. But as Kathy said, there are plenty of other small colleges, so on and so forth, that can benefit from the same thing. It's amazing the number of small colleges that still don't have the staffing that they really deserve.
Absolutely.
All right. So we're just basically looking to improve your situation, having solid data information collected, and being able to clearly communicate that.
Exactly.
All right. So, Jim, let's go ahead and talk about, again, I mentioned the article that you wrote back in 93, and you know, you often have posted on social media about how you, some of the stats you guys have done, or some of the ways that you have shown your value. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how the value justification model has worked for you?
Started back in 1993 when I started at my first school here in South Carolina at Myrtle Beach High School. It was about between 400 and 500 square feet. And after a year there, it became very apparent that room to do what we were trying to do. We too many athletes trying to come into a small facility, and I needed a bigger facility. And that I was asked was, well, what evidence do you have to prove this? So to me, that I needed the data to support what happened in order to get a bigger athletic training facility, bigger budget. So we had already been collecting all this data to begin with. We had our sign-in sheets. We knew how many kids were coming in the training room. We knew how many athletes that we were evaluating for injuries. We knew how many athletes were getting so many treatments per week, per month, so on. And the thing was, we really weren't doing anything with this data. So I said, let's go ahead and find out really mean, especially as it pertains to the value of those numbers. So I went out and talked to a bunch of different physical therapy clinics in the area, sports medicine clinics. A lot of them are kind of hesitant to share that information. I was able to convince enough of them to kind of give me an idea of what they charge for those various. And then I was able to take those numbers, average them out, and come with a relatively good number to represent what we were doing in the high school. So able to put all that together to my administration and say, this is what we're doing. We're seeing this many kids every day in the training room. We're seeing this many injuries. I've got a facility that can only accommodate 4 students at a time, more space. I need more money to do all these things. Here are the numbers. You can't argue with the numbers. Here they are. So subsequent to that, you really need to write this stuff down and write an article for the NATA News or something about that. So that's kind of where that article came from. And then from that, Kathy and other people, I think, have built off. Kathy's been doing this a long time, just like I have. And the thing that people started to realize, hey, we need to do this. But even 25 years later, there's still a lot of trainers that don't understand the importance of keeping track of that data, even knowing how many athletes they're seeing in their training room or how many injuries they evaluated. That's important information, Obamacare and everything else.
All right. So I know looking at your papers that you sent me, it said somewhere like around 6,000 athlete exposures. How did you measure that?
Exposures is, and that goes back to some of the injury data collection and so on. The way that we measure exposures, and it's pretty much the same everywhere, is we take the number of athletes that are participating in each athletic activity every day, and we count those. Certainly, there's some play there. We don't go around to every athletic team and count each individual, which if we were doing this for a really solid research study, we would have to do that. But for our purposes, we're just looking for general averages. So we know if we've got 15 basketball players, we can assume we're going to have 15 basketball players practicing every day. So we take the number of practice days, the number of games, so on and so forth, and we count how those kids participate each day, and then we multiply everything out. So if we have sports going on, those athletes, we multiply it all together over the period of the month, and that gives us our exposures. In order to get our injury rate, injuries we had for that month, and we divide it, exposures, and we get a pretty good idea. Again, it's not rock solid because we're not doing research, but it gives us a general idea of where we stand in our own school, but also as a comparison to the larger national studies that are going on as well.
I gotcha. All right, Kathy, so along the same lines there, how have you seen the value justification model working in athletic training and, again, focusing on secondary schools as much as possible?
Sure. So I've talked to a lot of people who have experienced what Jim has experienced, and there's a few components that I really want to emphasize that he's done. One is not only collecting the data, but then collecting it longitudinally. So collecting it for 1 year or 2 years is great, but it really is something that has to be done year after year after year. And then second, Jim connected a dollar value to what he was doing. So, and he talked about going out to an outpatient rehab clinic, which is great. You can also get information from Medicare data, which I know we don't treat Medicare patients, but Medicare is the only insurance that the data is readily available. Other insurance companies are not going to share that unless you have a contract with them. So using that data to put a monetary value on the treatments you're doing, the evaluations you're doing, all of that is important as well. The exposures are incredibly important, but with that, the injury rates. And again, longitudinally, we'll see injury rates likely going down with an athletic trainer because we know that we bring that value to schools. So like Jim has explained, I've had many secondary school athletic trainers come to me and say, I started to collect this, and having that monetary value is very powerful to an administrator. You can tell them, well, I see this many athletes, I've done this many evaluations, and that's powerful. But when you say, and if that had been done somewhere else, it would have been worth this amount of money. Well, now you're talking dollars, and that's what they understand the most. And then I would also encourage everyone to collect how much they're working. And I know oftentimes that's depressing, But if you're able to show that you're working these and documented inordinate amount of hours, this is now justification for another staff member so that you can provide better care and your work-life balance can be a little better. I've had people tell me $500,000 in a year of value-driven treatments. There was an article, I think 2 years ago in the NATA News, of a high school in Idaho, and I believe they were well over $1.2 million in a year. So that those kinds of value dollars that are being communicated and associated with us are extremely powerful. I hear stories from Brian Robinson and Larry Cooper about how using that data gave them the ability to hire more staff, like Jim, a bigger facility, a higher budget. All of these things, data-driven opportunity is what really helps the administrators make those decisions that are going to go in the right direction for every athletic trainer.
All right, so where do we start? What is going to be the most important information? Because on mine right now, it has the athlete's name, the student ID, so that we can identify them for attendance purposes. It has the body part. It has the what we're doing. So it's like a checkbox. So it's either like evaluation or it's whatever rehab thing that we're doing. So what do I need to include in that data that I'm collecting? I know you said hours, and I keep track of that as well. So what do you think?
Definitely keeping track of what you're doing, and then if possible, associating that with the CPT code. So that's a part of our skill set that we should becoming more comfortable with. What is the CPT code that you're actually doing? Is it therapeutic exercise or is it ultrasound? And then again, attaching that dollar value to it. So most injury surveillance companies that you're using, the EMRs, have that ability to add CPT codes and a dollar value and attach it to it. The effort comes that very first time plugging that data in. And then after that, it's driven through the program and telling you how much of that value is being represented by what you're doing. The other component that I'd like to introduce is doing functional outcome surveys. And I know that's foreign to athletic trainers in some settings, but there are ways to do that that is not very labor intensive for the athletic trainer, but it provides us with some value-driven data that shows the efficacy of athletic trainers that we've been looking for decades in this profession. So that's something else down the road that I'd love to see incorporated into secondary schools and college universities.
Okay, so currently we use Rank One, but for the sign-in sheet, we use just a simple Google form because it's easy and they can put that information there. As far as tracking the outcome, are you recommending that looking at when they were cleared to play or after an injury report? How do you see that happening?
Well, a functional outcome survey is something that's very common in where I am. And it's a form that the athlete fills out when they first start their rehab and then when they're done. And the percentage of improvement is that piece of data that shows how effective we were through our plan of care. So it is something you have to do at the beginning and the end, but that's the only two times, and really collecting that number. We're actually in the middle of working on an app that will provide that functional outcome survey tool to the athletic trainer on a smartphone or on an iPad that you can hand to the patient. They fill it out, and that information is collected from a data standpoint. So there's lots of things that are happening out there that will make that easier. And this now will show, as an athletic trainer, my patient, my athlete improved X percentage over the course of their plan of care. Data that we're hungry for as a profession.
All right, what do you think, Dr. Barry?
Yeah, Jeremy, I agree completely. And I think one of the things that we have to convince, especially the secondary school athletic trainer, who in so many ways feels so overwhelmed, they get this idea that, oh my God, there's another thing I have to worry about doing and so on and so forth. But they don't realize that in the big picture of things, I'm out. You know, so when we talk about, when you ask about, well, what should I include in my daily log or whatever, I don't really think it matters what type of log you use or what system you use. What's important is that you use the system. So easy, or to just simply not put something into the system. So one of the things I harp on my staff all the time here about is when an athlete comes in the athlete training room, that information gets into the system. We do that ourselves because I want to make sure it's in the system. EMR systems that Kathy mentioned, we use athletic trainer system here in our school district. It has the student kiosk on it. A lot of my colleagues in our other high schools in the district come in, they sign in on a computer at the desk and so on. That has positives and negatives. I choose not to do that. We use a simple access database. It's a Google form for you guys. But again, regardless of the system you use, the most important thing is that the data is getting put into the system. Mm-hmm. Thing with doing and so on and so forth. So many times at the secondary school level, athletic trainers that don't document their evaluations. That opens up a whole nother can of worms. But just from what we're talking about today, if you don't document those evaluations, you don't have that data then to show and the people that are making the decisions, kids were evaluating, this is what we're seeing, these are the injuries we're seeing. This we saw that, but if you don't have the paper to back it up, so the actual inputting of the data is so important and much to do when we feel overwhelmed. Be more important to do that than to do some other things that we think are more important.
All right, so one of the things you mentioned there is the evaluation form, and that's an area that I know that I'm lacking because we have the kids sign in, but then they the written copy of the evaluation or putting it into Rank One, because that's a whole nother step. I have to go into the computer and type all that in. And as you know, most of the time when you're in the middle of doing an evaluation, you have somebody else coming in needing something. And so it's hard for me to sit and do that all at once because I haven't made it a practice. So what do you recommend for someone like me to do to be more efficient at inputting those injury evaluations?
This is my best friend right here.
We'll post a note.
I'm right there with you, Jeremy. When we have, you have 40 kids coming in after school, you've got them lined up one after another. There's no way that you can stop and put an evaluation in a computer at that point. So I grab a sticky note. I put the basic information down, the date, the kid's name, what's wrong with them. I need to be able to remember what I did with that particular athlete. And then either later on in the afternoon or even sometimes the next day, I have to go back in and put that stuff in when I have time to do it. But I have enough information available there back and do that. And you got to find your little tricks that work for you to do that. Because in a real world, you're not going to be able to stop and do that. Even if you have a laptop and you can push the little cart around like you see in emergency rooms in the hospital and stuff, we don't have scribes. It would be great if we all had scribes like they do in emergency rooms, but we don't have that. So you've got to just come up with little tricks to kind of figure that out. I have a colleague here in my school district. He puts everything in his phone. He creates a little note in his phone, and the little voice recorder on his phone, and he records notes. So whatever works for you, but the point again is to get the data into the system at some point.
All right, Kathy, what do you think on that same question there?
Oh, I 100% agree with Jim. We all know how important documentation is. And as he alluded to, even if we start talking about liability, we know how important it is. But if we go beyond that with data collection, we just have to find our own tricks that work for us. And what works for one won't work for another. But finding some way to be able to go back and document appropriately, because again, that's a part of showing our value as a healthcare provider. So doing it appropriately for all of those reasons and for the purposes of documenting what we're doing day to day, so we can use that data moving forward. And who is it that said once, if it's not written down, it didn't happen? And there is so much truth to that in every aspect, from liability to proving our value through data collection.
All right. So you also mentioned in the beginning, Kathy, as part of your definition, is having it neatly organized. So recently we had School Board Appreciation Month was in January. And so we kind of put together. I put together a little flyer, but when in doing that, I was kind of lost. Like I had all the data. You know, we had 900 entries into the athletic trainer treatment log, and then just sorting through that, making it something that's appealing, because all I wanted it to be was like a flyer, something that they could see while they were eating the cookies that we gave them, right? And how do I make that appealing? How do I make that presentable?
Well, I think you're on the right track, creating some kind of flyer that is easy to read and has little snippets that they can easily decipher. The athletic training staff did X number of treatments. We provided this many hours of rehabilitation. We did this many evaluations. All of those things that are important, and adding that dollar value to it. We provided X thousands of dollars of healthcare to the student athletes of our school. Sharing how much you're working might not be the best thing to share with the school board. That to me is more of a one-on-one with your administrator when you're asking for more staff. But showing how much you're doing in the time you're doing, and perhaps if another staff member were here, we could provide X number of more treatments to our athletes. And this is why we need a bigger facility, you know, and all of those things. But I like your idea of creating a flyer that has those snippets of information that are easy to read, very easy to interpret, and then hopefully we'll create more questions. We'll generate questions from them on, well, what do we need to do to make your job easier? That's what we can hope, right?
All right. So in doing that, again, that was the first time I've ever taken the data that we have and kind of put a number value to it. And I went off of a post that Jim had done on Facebook, and I used the values that he had assigned there, or kind of like did my own math. And I think it came out to be somewhere around like 60, it was either 20 or $60,000. I think it was 20. And that's why I was like, man, that seems really low. But that was just in, I guess, my unscientific approach of getting those values and those numbers. And so how do I share that so that it looks like, okay, well, you're saving us $20,000, but you're costing us $60,000 for the two of you to work there. You know, how do I put that in a good light? Because they know what they're paying me per semester, per year. How do I do that?
Hey, let me jump in first, and then Kathy can certainly jump in on that as well. Let me go back to also about presenting the information and so on. I agree completely with what Kathy was saying. The key is you want it to be follow the keep it simple, stupid principle, because you're dealing with people that aren't medical people. So you want to keep that information clear, concise, to the point. I like to use a lot of graphs, pie charts, that kind of stuff as well. One of the things I think too that's really important when you're going to do something like this is to put it in the lingo administrators like to see or are used to seeing. So a lot of times if I'm doing a report for district level personnel or whatever, I'll call it an executive summary. That's a term that they're familiar with. When they get a report from a executive level of one of their departments, that's the term that they are familiar with and understand, and they're going to be looking for certain things. Now, as far as the issue of value and so on, I think you hit on two important points. First of all, when you start collecting this data, you realize how much the value is for what this stuff really is worth. So people are often kind of in a way, oh my God, I can't believe that we actually do this much stuff in our athletic training room. I can't believe that. Or, oh, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything at all. You got to be careful with that, because showing the value. Don't read more into it than what it should be. You and I had kind of communicated a little bit privately over the last few days, and you were asking about how our numbers have gone down over the year or over the past couple of years. And that is in direct correlation to the fact that our injury rate right now is extremely low. It's almost down to one injury per 50,000 exposures, which is crazy low, given that the national average is about 12. If we don't have kids getting hurt, we're not going to be doing anything in the athletic training room. So to me, and says, well, you're only showing you dollars worth of business in the athletic training room. Well, it's in the public schools, it's not about what we're making for the school district. It's showing what the value of the service is. So you kind of have to explain supposed to be doing. Our injury rate is 1 per 50,000 exposures, and the reason we don't have anybody in the athletic training room is because nobody's getting hurt, because we're keeping people healthy and on the field. Not necessarily about justifying what the school district is paying you in the school district, that the money that they're spending on you is doing what it's supposed to be doing. You're doing your job. If it was an issue of make money to support salary and my staff salary, have every athlete that had a hangnail in my athletic training room so I could charge them something for it. All right. And Kathy, you know, being in the private sector, she can certainly talk more about that than I can. I don't understand any of that stuff like she does, because she relies on that for her business to be successful in a lot of ways. But in the public school setting, using that value for doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Completely agree with what Jim just said. It's not about saving money for the district. It's more about I've provided this thousands of dollars of valued services to the community, to the athletes of your particular school. And one of the things that I love so much about the secondary school value model that the NATA developed is it takes all of those components that we do as athletic trainers in any setting, and it helps us to organize our thoughts about it. So what kind of medical services are we doing? What kind of risk mitigation are we doing? And it helps you organize what you're doing into certain categories that you can then bring to your administrator. So Jim brings a great point that it's not just about the dollar value, it's the big picture. It's the global look at what you're doing in your job and how many, how your number of lost days of games or practices has diminished over time. How many kids you're keeping in school because they're not having to go to the rehab clinic down the road because you're doing the rehab in-house. And does that save federal dollars for the school because they're in school and not missing school? How are we contributing to academic success? And we know that we do that, especially through our concussion return to play protocols and helping our athletes get back from any type of injury, but especially from concussions. And what kind of cost containment measures are we doing? So all of those things that we do as athletic trainers organized into that one document and seeing the big picture, not just how many treatments we're doing, but how do we have an impact across the entire school system is also very important.
All right, Jim, how have you been able to identify the number of absences or reduced absences that your services have provided?
Honestly, we tracked that specifically in what we do. Again, you know, scientific standpoint, but just from knowing what we're doing and knowing what kids we're sending out and so on and so forth. Obviously, if we don't have a lot of kids getting hurt, kids out to see physicians. Mm-hmm. There's a correlation there that goes together. I haven't seen a need to track that just because those numbers aren't real, real big for us. Now, if it was a situation where we were seeing 500 injuries a year, a different situation. You know, we're averaging, you know, right around 120, 150 injuries a year that are recordable. So I haven't seen the need to do that.
All right. So, Kathy, can you talk a little bit more about why or how you would look at the number of absences? Because I know you guys both said that find the information that's important to them. So absences or kids being in class, you know, for that average daily attendance time is important. And so how do you see us looking at that or calculating that?
Well, Jim is actually more of an expert on this than I would be in being in the secondary school system. But I would think just tracking how many athletes you're having to send out to rehab, perhaps because you don't have the resources or the staff to do those rehabs in-house. And then if that athlete is doing that in the morning or in the afternoon, is that reflected in absenteeism? I think that would depend on the school and would depend on the availability of what you're able to do versus what the rehab clinic is able to do down the road. And then more so, I'm thinking more about missed practices and missed games because of injury rates is also a strong indicator. I think that's what I have heard can be powerful numbers is our kids missing school because they have to be somewhere else, as opposed to the athletic trainer can handle that, becomes a powerful ally in your data documentation.
All right, so again,
now, as far as handling that too, it really wouldn't be that hard to track it. I know in our case, in our school attendance, folks that work in our school go back very easily by identifying he did referrals on, because I have that referral information. I can cross-reference it with our attendance clerk and do that very easily. I think it's just a matter of whether or not you want to track that data. In our case, we haven't seen the need to do that. For places, it may be a significant issue where the athletic trainer could use that data to their advantage if they had that situation.
Okay, so one of the things that we haven't talked so much about is the liability issue of not having somebody there all the time. And realistically, we can't have an athletic trainer there from 6:45 in the morning until 7 o'clock every night with somebody still surviving. And so using that, the hours and that aspect, Kathy, how would you present that?
Well, you said it best. I think work-life balance is one of those issues that you hear the most about when athletic trainers are talking about the negativity of our jobs. We work an awful lot of hours, and we do that because, one, we love what we do, and two, those athletes need us. And we feel obligated to be there, even sometimes at the detriment of ourselves and our own families. So it starts with tracking how many hours you're actually working, and using that data and talking to that administrator with that data about, I can't keep up this pace. So you tell me which sports I shouldn't cover, or can you give me more help so that I can provide the best care to these athletes? But again, it's data driven. I'm doing this many hours. I'm seeing this many athletes. I can't do it by myself. I need help. Here's the data to prove that I need help.
And to build on that, Jeremy, I can tell you from personal experience in our school district, back in around 1994, 1995, all of the athletic trainers in our school district, and at that time we had 8, we now have 21. At that time we had 8 athletic trainers. All of us were teacher athletic trainers, teaching a full load of classes, which would at that time been 5 or 6 classes a day, and then going in the athletic training room working. And through my data collection, because I was really the only one doing it at the time, we were able to show that I was working 16 hours a day some days if there were games over the period of the school year. At that time, I was young, stupid, and single and didn't have children. It wasn't that big of a deal. But as I married and had kids and so on, point of ridiculousness, and because I had tracked that data, I was able to take that information to a couple of school board members and say, look, kids in the county are working 12, 14, 16 hours a day most of the year. Our teacher is only having to work 8 hours a day. We've got to do something about this. Mm-hmm. So the school district went back and looked at it, and they said, all right, this is what we need to do. And they asked for our input on it. They said, how would you deal with this problem? And our suggestion was that we reduce our teaching load back to a half-time teaching load, become a half-time teacher and a half-time athletic trainer, and then also give us flex time. So from 1995 on, for teachers, we've been a 0.5 teacher, a 0.5 athletic trainer. We don't come into school till 11:30 in the morning. We teach our class, and then we do what we need to do for the rest of the day. And if you look at our data, about 8 hours a day now. Sometimes it's a little bit more, sometimes it's a little bit less, but it's a reasonable work day. We go home at a certain time. The training room closes at 6:30 unless we have a game going on. If a team chooses to practice after 6:30, they know my phone number. They know my assistant's phone number. So we have those policies and procedures in place because we can't be here all the time. You're exactly right. Now we've added about 15 more athletic trainers over the years. A lot of those new athletic trainers are full-time athletic trainers. But again, we've kept the same ideas in place this time. My associate athletic trainer that works with me here, she's a full-time athletic trainer, but she doesn't come in till 11:30 in the morning, till 6:30 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So the district recognizes, because of the data that we've collected, each employee that works unique hours, he asked to work an inordinate amount of hours compared to any other employee. Now, of course, the coaches would argue that that's a bunch of crap, but that's a whole nother matter. So,
and I think the important thing that Jim just talked about is that it didn't happen overnight. He didn't walk into it to his job on the first day and say, hey, you've got to change this. It happened over time, and it happened as he was collecting data and is able to prove the inordinate amount of time that he was working. So relationships and data, that's, I think, what drives a lot of this.
All right, Jim, one of the things that I know you've discussed or people have asked you about is the holidays. And you said that at your school, that at the district, that if there's any games or practices over the holidays, you're not there unless you are paid extra at, you know, whatever the set rate is. How did that come about?
That came about as a contractual issue. Again, we looked at, and that probably has less to do with data, but the data still helped to drive those decisions. Every other employee of the school district was expected to do. And meetings, and like Kathy said, this is not something that you just snap your fingers and it happens. It's a matter of building relationships and convincing people over time. But we got to the point about 15, 16 years ago where we said, look, it's not fair for us to be expected to work over all these holidays for basically free. You pay ticket takers, you pay security, you pay the officials, you pay the custodians who clean the gym, whatever the case may be. Medical coverage, you should have to pay the going rate for that as well, because the same contract that every other school employee has, and it clearly states in that contract that you don't work Christmas, you don't work spring break or Thanksgiving, and so on. So the school district came back and they said, if you want to have tournaments and you want to have these activities during the holidays, you're going to have to pay the athletic trainers their hourly rate, just like you would pay anyone else. And because of that, which is a good thing, is a lot of our schools have just said, we're not going to do that stuff. We're either not willing to pay or we can't afford to pay. Choose not to do the activities. And what our school district has said too is if you don't have an athletic trainer, you can't have the event. Have the event, you better budget accordingly, because if you don't have an athletic trainer, the event isn't going to happen.
So if we ended right now, I would say the one thing that's most important is collect something. Even if it's not all the data, even if it's part of it, start collecting something. Because like you were showing, Jim, that since 2013, the injury rate has decreased significantly, or the savings has decreased significantly, because the injury rate, like you said, has decreased significantly. And so over the course of those 7 years, you've been showing the athlete exposures, the injuries, the treatments, this type of stuff, the hours you've been working. And so if you wait till next year to start, till you get everything perfect, then you're going to miss out on everything that's coming right now. So definitely start collecting something right now and then use that. And then also, one thing I'm definitely hearing is know the target audience, know who you're talking to and what you're looking to accomplish, and then go from there. So what else do you guys think about the value justification model?
I completely agree, Jeremy, with what you just said. Collect something. Collect how many hours you're working, how many treatments you're doing, how many evaluations you're doing at the bare minimum. And then the dollar association, you can do in the off season. You can, those types of reports will be driven by that basic data. It'll also tell you about missed time, how many athletes are out at a given time. All of collecting that basic information is a great way to start. And then as you get used to it and you get on top of it, you can add those other little nuances. But collect something. And I love what Jim just said about value and demanding that, hey, you're going to pay the ticket taker, you're going to pay me. And oftentimes we as athletic trainers, we don't think along those lines. We want to be there for the athletes. And as my friend Larry Cooper likes to say, we'll do it for a hot dog and a t-shirt. And those days need to stop. Show our value, demand our value, be paid for providing healthcare. I love it.
All right, so along those... Go ahead, Jim.
That's exactly right. Just to reiterate again what you said, Jeremy, collect something. Start with the simple stuff. You know, it's amazing years to get my colleagues in this school district to start collecting data because I don't have time. I don't feel like doing it. I don't, you know, and they say, okay, well, how many for injuries this year? Well, I don't know. How many kids came in your athletic training room this year? Those are simple questions that an administrator may actually ask you just in the course of everyday activity. And you really look stupid at those simple questions. So like you said, if you just collect the basic data in your room, evaluating, so you have some basic numbers to give people when they ask you for that stuff, because as you know, it's all about data. Mm-hmm. All the time is what does the data say? And in some cases, data isn't always the best driver. Athletic training, it's one of the best tools we have to improve our situation.
All right, so what tips do you have for somebody who is afraid of rocking the boat? So maybe they have a pretty good situation and they don't want to say, you know, if I push too hard for this, I'm going to be like, no, well, but we do need you to go ahead and, you know, cover middle schools as part of your current contract because it says other duties as assigned. What would you say to that person that's kind of afraid to rock the boat?
If you're afraid, go ahead, Jim.
I would say go ahead and rock the boat. As Kathy knows, I'm never afraid to rock the boat. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but you've got to roll with the waves. And I'm a strong believer in the stand up for what you believe in and fight for what you want and what you think's important. As I get older and wiser, I learn that maybe I didn't always do that the right way or the best way, but thanks and you go. So you have to be brave enough to be willing to fight for yourself and for your program. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to do that, then it becomes really, really difficult to improve your situation. You've got to find somewhere in your heart to do that or someone that's willing to do it for you. Otherwise, things are never going to improve. And then what we end up seeing are people that either leave the profession or become frustrated with the profession because they feel like they're not being effective. But you got to really look in the mirror and see what you could do to become more effective as well.
I'm not sure I can say it better than that. But if we want to continue to improve as a profession, we have to be willing to ask for our positions to be improved. So rock that boat.
There you go. So yeah, if you want to change, then you have to be that change. And usually data is the reason. Usually either a catastrophic event or data. And, you know, hopefully you can use the data to prevent the catastrophic event because, you know, an event wasn't covered because you were at another event. And there we go. So, all right. Anything else that you guys feel is really important about collecting data, about the right way to present it that we haven't covered so far?
My only thing would be make sure you back your data up, save it. You know, I was at Myrtle Beach High School 22 years. I've been here at Conway now for 5 years. Last spring, I got a phone call from the young lady that works at, she said, I need this information and I don't have it in my system. Do you happen to have it yet? Able to pull it up on my hard drive and give her the information she needed, which was really important information for her. So save that information, have it available, because you never know when somebody's going to need it or ask for it.
All right, Kathy?
No, I think we've covered everything. I will tell you a little story that kind of goes on the other side of it. I had a friend who told me she got a call from an athletic trainer who had just lost his job, and could she help him get his job back? And so she asked the questions, well, how many athletes are you treating? Well, a lot. Well, do you know how many? Do you have logs? No, I don't have time to do that. And so she went down this road with this athletic trainer and hadn't collected data, hadn't really written anything down, which we all know is dangerous anyway, but he didn't have the data to even justify his existence at that particular school. He couldn't tell his administrator everything that he had been doing. So there's another side to this too. Data not only can make your position better, but it also justifies what you're doing day to day. And it is the professional thing to do. So start small and build as you can, as you get more staff and as you improve your situation.
Very good. That's one thing I definitely need to look at. I know like Google, we have, like I said, our stuff on Google Drive, but I need to download it and keep in that information so that I can have it long haul or over the years to kind of look back at trends, things that I've done well, or if I switch jobs or somebody else comes and takes over, then I have that information there for them. Definitely something I need to make sure I do. And again, I think we're on the right track. I've started giving out flyers to the school board. I've had school board members here. I've talked to some other people. So this isn't the first time I've talked about this, but I'm by no means an expert. And again, it is something that's not easy to do until you've done it a bunch of times, and then it's just kind of normal. So Kathy, Jim, do you guys have any resources that you would like to point people towards to get more information?
If you're a member of the NATA, the Secondary School Value Model, the Position Improvement Guide, the Position Proposal Guide, all on the NATA website. Great work done by the past, 5-10 years of Secondary School Committee. Use those resources. They're there to help you do this and with a little bit of ease compared to trying to do it on your own.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And so many of our members aren't aware of those resources that are available to them. So I would agree with Kathy. That's the go-to place to find that information.
All right. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/value model. And I have links, like I said, to Jim's article, to our sign-in sheet, a Google Drive folder with the information that Jim shared with me. I've also talked about this topic before in episode 316, so I've got that link there in the show notes. Kathy, I have your Twitter here and your email. Is there a better way to get a hold of you than one of those two?
Those are the two easiest, and I'm happy to talk to whoever has questions.
All right, and then Dr. Jim Berry, I've got your Twitter and your email. Is there a better way for somebody to get a hold of you?
Same way. That's the best way to get a hold of me. Absolutely.
All right. So real quick, Dr. Jim Berry is Dr. Jim Berry ATC on Twitter, or drjimberry@gmail.com. And then Kathy is KIDIER1 on Twitter, or the same thing without the one, KIDIER, on at ddsportsmed.com for her email. And again, those are in the show notes, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/value model. One of the things I like to do is like to hear from people who are listening to the podcast, ask anybody who's listening outside of the United States to contact me, because I want to get a hold of you and have you on the show. So if you're an international listener, please reach out to me. Again, using sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has a way to get a hold of me there on Twitter, Facebook, email, basically anything. Just reach out and say, hey, I listen, and I'd like to share my story, even if it's just for 5 minutes. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/value model. Dr. Jim Berry, Kathy Derringer, and I am Jeremy Jackson, and that is a wrap. Thank you, guys.